Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And yes, we live in an age when enough people elected the President of the United States, despite his boasting about sexual assault, and he's the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. My next guest endured repeated sexual abuse by more than one father figure when she was a teenager, and a rape during her first year at the prestigious Air Force Academy in Colorado that left her with chronic physical health problems along with emotional trauma from all the instances of sexual violence. Her name is Lynn Hall. She's now a crisis counselor and advocate for survivors and has published a new memoir about her experiences called Caged Eyes, an Air Force cadet's story of rape and resilience. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Before we even get into any details, how hard was it for you to write and publish a book that reveals so much about your pain and these horrible experiences?
Yeah, it's been extremely difficult. It's taken me a number of years to write it, take breaks when I needed to, and then go through the publication process.
What's the reference to caged eyes in the title of the book?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. Caged eyes is the requirement of first-year cadets to look at a point directly in front of their faces for the full year. So they're not allowed to gaze or look around at the campus. And it sort of became an extended metaphor throughout the story.
And you had an upperclassman look you in the eye, you write, and say bluntly that, quote, a woman who gets herself raped isn't strong enough to defend herself, let alone the country, and shouldn't be in the military, unquote.
Correct.
My goodness, on the first point, and how pervasive was his attitude in the Air Force Academy is the second point.
Yeah, that was the only time when I was there that I heard such a statement said so explicitly and so clearly. But yet, I think that was the prevalent attitude. And in sort of a weird way, I'm glad that he said it so clearly because it justified all of the shame I felt. And that was really the moment when I turned my feelings around and I said, you know, this is not my fault. I shouldn't feel the shame. This is the culture. The culture has made me feel this way.
And so this takes it beyond the realm of sexual assault, sort of for its own sake, which is bad enough, but as almost a political and cultural statement that women shouldn't be in the military?
Right, right. That's correct. At the time, there was a survey done, and 1 in 5 male cadets at the Air Force Academy said that women should not be there at the institution.
You tell another story in the book about a classmate who stood up in a classroom in front of a professor and wrote some blatantly misogynistic things on the board. How did the professor and your classmates react?
You know, unfortunately, that professor did not take a stand against this classmate. He challenged him only slightly and said, I've served with some wonderful women who have been pilots. And this classmate argued, then wrote the list. And then the professor just wanted to continue with class. The point I would argue is where we need to get is where these bystanders are, standing up and taking a stand against the sort of misogyny or the normalization of sexual violence.
The way the Air Force Academy is structured, first years have to follow a litany of rules in that first year that might come across as frankly completely ridiculous to civilians who don't have any military experience. For example, you had to memorize the names and hometowns of all upperclassmen and women
right.
You might encounter in the hallway, or they could punish you. There were rules about how many times you were allowed to chew a bite of food in
Correct.
The dining hall. Don't tell Sean Spicer. Sexual assault is common. Oh, it wasn't gum. Never mind. Sexual assault is common in institutions of all kinds, I think it's fair to say. But do you think it's possible that the military power structure, that power imbalance, the officers, the upperclassmen versus lowerclassmen having complete control to that degree contributes to a sexual assault problem?
Yes, absolutely. It's a real double-edged sword. On one hand, the military does need to train, especially, you know, officer candidates, to have a certain amount of discipline and attention to detail. And as silly as all of those things sound, they do serve a purpose to an extent, and I wouldn't deny that. On the other hand, when upperclassmen who are only a few years older than first-year cadets wield that sort of power over, you know, 18-year-olds, it becomes a situation where whatever they say goes. And the line between sanctioned training and do this because it was done to me sort of hazing, and then at the other end, instances of sexual violence, it all becomes very blurred.
One thing that struck me reading your account of the sexual abuse you endured and your rape by an upperclassman, not only did you blame yourself constantly, but it never once seemed to occur to you that what these men did was illegal besides wrong, that
right.
They're criminals. Is that accurate? And how much was that sort of rape culture seeking into your brain?
That's absolutely accurate. I did not realize that it was a crime, especially the sexual abuse that happened when I was a teenager. And then by the time I was raped as a first-year cadet, I didn't even consciously question whether or not it was a crime or if I should report it. I just knew deep within myself that I had to stuff it down, not tell anybody, and in effect just pretend it didn't happen, which sounds so outlandish, I realize. But in all of my years since then, in speaking with other survivors, you know, first as part of survivors group and then as an advocate, I've realized just how pervasive that reaction is. And I do believe that's rape culture.
Do you think things have changed on that front at all since the years in which you were assaulted?
I think it is changing slowly. I have spoken to a few women, for instance, in these last year, who knew right away. Because people had told them, this is what rape sometimes looks like. It's not always a boogeyman in a dark alley, and explained to them. And so that when it happened to them, they recognized it and they were able to outcry immediately. That's amazing, but I don't think that that's happening nearly enough.
You wrote about how a survivor support group you were part of at the Air Force Academy helped because you were able to recognize the pervasiveness of your trauma.
Right.
What does that pervasiveness do to help survivors? And is that part of why you decided to write the book, even though it was difficult?
Right, absolutely. Well, when you feel that level of shame that something has happened to you that is your fault, that you can never tell anyone, and I really truly felt like I wouldn't ever share, even when, you know, it felt like it could cost me my life, I still was going to uphold that silence. Then when I found myself in a room full of other women who were saying the same things I was, who were raped by the exact same man, who felt the same way, suddenly this was not just about me. This was it. It sort of turned the personal political at that point, or at least that was the beginning.
Listeners, has anybody who's been in the military had an experience with sexual assault? And it doesn't have to be you as a victim. You don't have to share your victim stories. Or if you were a perpetrator, well, you can call up and share your perpetrator stories. Maybe it's good to confess. But do you see the culture? Did you even see the culture and want to say anything about how to combat it? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. It's been an issue for our senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, who wants to get sexual assault in the context of the military taken out of the military's chain of command to investigate. Sometimes the commanders are going to be the perpetrators. But even beyond that, if it's not the individual, there might be relationships there. Do you think that's an important crusade to be on? So far, she has not gotten the Congress to approve that or the executive branch.
Yes, it is definitely, definitely important. Senator Gillibrand, like you said, has been doing incredible work, even though the Military Justice Improvement Act hasn't yet gone through. You know, I'm hopeful that it still will because I do think it would make a tremendous difference.
I want to ask about President Trump, who in the past bragged about grabbing women's genitals without their consent, as you know. As a survivor of sexual violence, you know, obviously you're going to condemn the comment. But do you think the fact that he was elected enables additional sexual assault in the military?
I do. And I think it – to widen that, I think it enables it across our – the entire United States. Every time sexual assault makes the news, the question I ask myself is a survivor more or less likely to want to share her or his story after this national event? And after his election and basically the condoning of those statements – I have a feeling that many survivors probably thought our voices don't matter. And, you know, sort of worse than that are the survivors who aren't even survivors yet, who are watching these things unfold and who will be victimized in the future. And now, unfortunately, they are probably less likely to come forward when that happens.
You're going to be speaking at an event tonight, I see, about activism in the age of Trump. I'll give the listeners the details in a minute, but are you relating it to exactly what you just said?
Yes, absolutely.
How so?
How so? well, you know, it is our job now to be even louder in correcting this normalization of sexual violence. And that's hard work. But it starts in, you know, conversations like we're about to have tonight, one-on-one conversations. And that doesn't seem like very much, but it does go a long way to telling victims that they can share what has happened to them.
Nina in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Nina.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me. Wanted to thank Lynn for coming on. Being a West Point graduate myself, I know classmates and friends who have been assaulted while in the military, and unfortunately, it is still a culture where the women are punished because of it. And we need more advocates like Lynn to step forward for other women in the military because it is still a culture where the women are punished because of it.
Unfortunately, something has happened to Nina's line. We can only hear her faintly in the background, Nina in the Bronx. But you hear the praise for your courage in coming forward. And I guess Nina's saying it's tough and she wants to encourage more people who've had the experience to come out.
And that's exactly what I'd like to accomplish as well. My goal is for it no longer to be considered an act of courage or bravery for a survivor to speak about what has happened to them. That's really what it will take.
Pedro in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Pedro.
Hey, how are you? Good morning, ma'am. I just want to tell you that thank you for your courage for coming forward. I applaud you. I'm a husband, I'm an uncle, and I'm a son.
And you're a Marine.
Yes, I was. I was in Marine Corps, 8 years infantry, active. Now I'm National Guard active, all the way through. And I got to say is this, that the main problem comes, I do agree with her 100%, is the culture. If you're the platoon sergeant or you're the platoon commander and you witness something wrong, if you don't stop it right then and there, you are the problem. You are part of the culture. Now, that professor of hers that did that, if I was the NCOIC, make no mistake about it, he wouldn't have made it through that day. But it comes down to that one person to stand up and stop it. And they can't because they're weak. We choose a lot of professors and a lot of leaders because they look good on paper. We never evaluate their internal and moral courage. Do they have the guts to stand up on their own 2 feet and protect that one person that's being victimized?
Pedro, maybe you're too far removed because it's been a while since you were on active duty.
Oh, I'm still active duty now, brother. As National Guard.
As National Guard. So is there training for exactly what you were calling for?
There is training, but it just comes down to that one individual to stand up for that one person who's unable to defend themselves.
Pedro, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I love hearing from someone in the military who is on board with this and is willing to stand up because again, that's what we need.
Tell me one last thing. Do you have a problem getting your message out in a serious way from the occasional high-profile case of false accusation?
That's an enormous problem. Unfortunately, people think of that one case where there's a false accusation, and they extrapolate that and think, you know, that there are scores of women who are making these things up, or they know better, but they still use that as justification to deny these accusations. But the reality is that the rates of false accusations for sexual violence match just about all other crimes.
Lynn Hall is a crisis counselor and advocate for survivors of sexual violence and the author of a new memoir called Caged Eyes, an Air Force cadet's story of rape and resilience. She has an event tonight at 7 at Verso Books. The address is 20 J Street in Dumbo, 20 J Street for Verso Books, tonight at 7 o'clock. Just one quick thing. Do you want to share any words of comfort or wisdom to other survivors who may be listening and struggling with the shame and self-blame that you described?
Yeah, I just want them to know that they are not alone. It's cliche, but they're really not. There are millions of us in this country, and I hope they can reach out. I hope they can find a safe space to do that.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.